Well, everyone, we have a very special treat today. I'm Chiaki here, and I'm joined by Mitsugi, and we have with us Peter Payne, and he is the founder of everyone's favorite anime shopping website, JList.com.
Hello, nice to meet you.
I think a lot of people, obviously, if they listen to our show, know JList.com from all of our wonderfully, wonderfully campy commercials that we get so much praise on. And I know a lot of people have shopped on JList.com. But I kind of want to rewind the clock, Peter, and start from the very beginning with you and where the story of you and Japan and JList all began.
Okay. Yeah. Basically, I came to Japan in October of 1991, doing what a lot of people do. Of course, I had studied Japanese, and I was going to teach English at an English conversation school, which was a really small school. And then I just, you know, of course, I was going to be here for a year. A lot of people are like, yeah, you know, you never know how your life is going to work out. And then I ended up, you know, obviously staying 23 years so far, which is more than half of my life, which is kind of awesome. But looking back, I'm like, wow, that was unexpected. But yeah, one thing led to another. Obviously, I met a really wonderful woman and married her, and we have happy children and all those good things. So it was pretty cool looking back.
So you took Japanese, you said. Was that in college or in high school? What kind of started your affinity for Japan?
I started in college, and of course I'd been interested, you know, back in the early 80s, anime was, you know, super, super underground. If you knew what it was, of course you were sitting around reading books in Japanese, couldn't read, you know, anything. There was nothing in English. You know, the idea of watching subtitled anime or dubbed anime, unless it was Star Blazers or Robotech or something like that, was very, very, you know, something you just didn't even think about. You just sat around and watched it in Japanese and you know, did your best. And that was a sort of background. And I said, okay, I'm going to study Japanese in college. And it was, you know, worked out pretty well. I approached it from the right direction. I did a lot of things like how to learn Japanese is, of course, something I write about on my blog right now. But I mean, the ways that you can go about succeeding at it, ways you can tag it from different problems or from different directions, which makes it, you know, quite not, obviously it's very difficult, but then you can sort of, you know, melt it down and make it into what you want. So I did that. It was a lot of fun. And I said, okay, I want to go to Japan. Okay, here's an English school I can work at. And, you know, it was quite good.
What would you say is the ultimate piece of advice for a person that's sort of living in the United States or in the West, struggling to learn Japanese as a second language?
Basically, you know, things have really changed since the old days when, you know, I really wanted to read Maze on Ikkoku, which is this really wonderful manga from Takashi Rumiko, and you just did it in Japanese back then, and now you can buy the books, assuming they're still in print. You can buy scans. You have access to all these things in English. So it's fundamentally difficult. It's fundamentally different from it was back then. You have to just jump in and do it in Japanese, I think, and find whatever works for you. Definitely, it's a difficult thing, especially when you're trying to learn Japanese from wherever you are in the world, and you can just, you know, do a little bit every day. But yeah, it's definitely a challenging thing.
I know for me personally, when I was living in Japan, there was nothing like it as far as language learning. No matter how much I studied kanji or whatnot in the States, it just didn't compare. Now, you had mentioned briefly that you were writing about some of this on your blog. Just so everyone knows, you know, we're all familiar with JList.com, but if someone is interested in connecting with you, what are the channels that they can go through to do that?
Well, we're pretty hyperactive on social media. So basically, my own blog that archives everything I've ever written pretty much is at blog.jlist.com. You can go and read old articles there. The current blog that we're writing about, we update, say, usually three times a week, and that's on the front page of jlist.com or jbox.com. And then we have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/JListCom, as one word, JList, JLASTCOM. And I make a lot of posts there. I'm on Twitter as @MarkJList, and we're also on Tumblr. So basically, we really like social media. It's a lot of fun, you know. Ask questions and get answers from 100 people right away. Like if I say, "Hey guys, what should I write about?" and everyone's got a reply, and it's really cool. I really like that. It's really neat.
Yeah, I recommend the. Maybe you already mentioned this in a different way, but I always enjoy receiving and reading the newsletters that you put out. There's always some really interesting tidbit about, you know, living in Japan, and then something anime related that I think people can relate to.
Those can be signed up for at jlist.com/subscribe if you want to get our newsletters. Basically, that was one of our early successes as a company. I would send out newsletters, and this is like from like 1996, 1997, 1998. I would send out newsletters saying, okay, we got, you know, these music CDs in, these figures in. And then I would sort of put just some here's what's happening in Japan at the top of the page. And people along the way, they really said, wow, we really like reading this little blurb that you put here. You know, please do more of it. The turning point for us sort of as a company was in 1998 when a really bad American Godzilla film was made. And I was like, you know, I have to write about this and give my opinion on it. And everyone was like, wow, that was really cool. You know, do this more. So we sort of realized, well, this is really what we're not a company selling bento boxes and figures. We're a company that's just bridging Japan with these little emails that was at the time, because they didn't have really blogs yet. And then along the way, we're also selling bento boxes, and it was a pretty, pretty important thing for us to realize.
So that turning point was in 1998, you said, or was it 2000?
That's when I marked my start as a blogger. We were doing
okay.
That, but that was sort of like the one of the lines we had to cross along the way, you know, as a company.
Right. So, I mean, if I have the timeline in my head, you went to Japan in 1991. I'm awful with dates, so please correct me. And then you had that kind of turning point where you were realizing exactly what you meant to the market that you were reaching. But where in there did you go from, I'm going to go to Japan and work on my Japanese and have this great experience, to, hey, I think I want to start a company? When was that moment in your head?
Basically, the internet hit in like 1994, and you know, everything was suddenly about the internet. It was a very, very exciting time. Literally, like people who weren't around at the time, it was really this stupid period where somebody would start a site called cheesegraters.com, and they were going to change the way we all bought cheese graters, because they were going to be the go-to place for cheese graters. And then investors would throw money at these companies, and of course, none of them made a dollar. And it was a very, just obviously, you know, like a bizarre time. And yet, you could really feel this was something different than it had been before. And obviously, a bunch of the, you know, all that stuff would sort of go away, but then something that was really important would stay, like Amazon.com, for example. And like when Netscape had their IPO, it was like, you know, this really energetic time. And I said, well, that's kind of neat. I would like to do something with the web. And I had already basically, like I had sort of done a impromptu shop at the first anime expo, but actually back when it was Anime Con. So this is in 91. And so like from the very first anime convention, I knew, you know, this is just a hugely energetic place. There's just hundreds and hundreds of people. Everyone is just really loving anime. And that's just really a fun place to be. So I knew the demand was there, and I'm like, okay, I'm now here in Japan. So we did a couple along the way. We did a couple of test appearances at Anime Expo as the first couple of Anime Expos, where I would buy stuff. I would buy like old copies of animes that were pretty cool, and we'd bring them over. So I I'd already been starting back then, but then the idea that okay, we need to make a company and this is our new job, that happened in 1996. And then we just sort of, you know, bought two computers and started, you know, financing it through our cash flow, figured out what kinds of things to sell. In the very beginning, we were a used CD shop company, really, because that was what was really big at the time. And then one by one, we just sort of added products, calendars, we added right away. So anyway, that was a really exciting time. And we were just saying, okay, well, this is kind of fun. Let's do this.
Do you remember, I know you said you kind of started out as a used CD shop. Do you remember the first CD or the first item you ever sold?
don't remember anything like that. It was one of the themes that we've seen has been like in the beginning, there was a really big gap between whatever Japan was doing now and what people in America or in other countries were doing. So you had like a 5-year gap that it would take 5 years for an anime or music to go overseas and be something that people would then want to buy. And so that was kind of easy for us. We had a lot of ability to say, okay, well, here's some CDs from a couple of years ago, and now, people will be ready for it, and we can sell them these CDs. And over time, that has really gone to effectively to zero, because you can get, last week's episodes of whatever is being broadcast on Japanese TV, and you can get it legitimately or illegitimately. And so there's that time lag between whatever Japan is doing and what the people outside of Japan are doing. Used to be really big, and now it's much smaller. So, back then we had a lot of time. We could say, okay, well, this person is popular now, so we'll get her CDs when they show up in the used CD shops, of course, because they don't show up right away because they're too popular.
Right. So, when you were starting the company, one of the things that first came into my head when I knew that I was going to be talking to you was the whole visa process, because I went into Japan and very similarly started out in Eikaiwa and had the specialist in international studies or whatnot, and
Right.
then I actually switched schools and I got to keep the same visa, but Mitsugi switched schools as well and he had to change his visa. And the moral of the story comes down to the visa process is awful. Just dealing with all of that is never a fun thing to do. When you started J-List, did you have to change your visa or did your status in Japan change at all?
No, I was already on. I came here in 91. I got married in 94. So then I was on a marriage visa, and then I changed it over to a and I, like you can apply at any time for permanent residency, and usually they turn you down once, and then they prove it the second time if you're, obviously you're clearly putting down roots, and they want you to stay because you'll pay taxes and all that stuff that Japan needs.
So
And so
it's like the driving
Yeah, it's
test.
like
They
the
have
driving exam.
they have to fail you at least once on
Yeah,
principle.
usually they do, but I got it the first time. It was kind of funny. I think it was a matter of like we're living with our parents. You live with your wife's parents in Japan most of the time. You wouldn't really do that in America. I'm a what's called a muko, which means I've married and I've entered my wife's household. And when I die, I'll enter their grave. And so it's a cultural thing. And so clearly the parents are okay with the marriage, and we've got kids, and everything is happy. So they just like, okay, give the guy permanent residency. So I never did get anything like Japanese citizenship because, as my wife says, I would be a Japanese who's bad at kanji. Why don't I stay an American? And so I'm an American with permanent residency.
Where would you put your Japanese ability then? I'm just curious.
I'm fluent in anything I need to do. Obviously, like looking at contracts, talking with banks, all the things that you do when you're running a business. There's always like the way language works is you're always there's no such thing as perfect fluency everywhere. If I walk into a history museum, suddenly I'll be transformed into like a third grader who's unable to understand the archaic kanji around me, things like that.
Right.
Even there's a cool museum I go to sometimes, and even you look at newspapers from World War II, and they're using many, many kanji that aren't used in modern Japanese, and they actually write right to left instead of left to right, like they currently write. So I mean, even the language changed that much just since the end of the war. So yeah, you always have areas that you're good at, and I don't. I just went to an economic like speech by this guy named Robert Feldman, who's like Morgan, he's the Japanese, he's an American, but he's the Japanese head of, or he's the head of the Japanese Morgan Stanley branch. So he's a big, smart economist guy. And so he was, up speaking in Japanese about the trends about the economy. And I was like, wow, I really wish my Japanese was this good. And so really, there's always
Oh,
another
wow.
level.
Right.
So let me shift gears a little bit back to J-List. It seems to me that J-List has obviously been a success, but I feel like every company has its difficult times and its challenges in it, and as it grows up. And I know that J-List is something that's you know, predominantly on the internet, but globalization is a gradual thing, and the internet hasn't always been as connected as it is today. So, but, you know, in addition to working in a foreign country, you know, I'm not really sure what kind of challenges you run into when you're trying to do business in Japan, but can you sort of maybe reveal some of the challenges that you've had to go through in establishing and building up JList?
Well, we've been around so long. We've obviously been through, you know, things like recessions, the 2000 dot-com bubble crash, the 2009, all the trouble we just went through. And that, of course, is difficult when you have to, you know, the economic outlook has changed greatly, and everyone said, well, obviously, you don't really need anime. You want anime because it's fun and interesting, but they're like, okay, well, I'm going to buy, you know, necessities instead of fun things from Japan. So we've had to sort of be light on our toes going through those periods, and we're really good at it. We just, you know, shift gears and do, you know, different things, and, you know, just change the mix that we're presenting to people. People would email us and say, hey, I see that Japan fell back into a recession. Are you guys okay? Well, it's actually almost always a very good thing for us when Japan goes into recession, because, and this is the kind of thing I write about on the blog, the companies are very conservative. They don't really want to deal with newfangled, you know, they didn't want to deal with the internet, of course, when it first came along, and then they had no choice. In the very, very beginning, it was like, oh, there's this foreigner here, and he's going to buy some products from my wholesale company. And they were like, yeah, whatever. And then, of course, after a while, we came to be, you know, we were growing very fast, and then the other Japanese companies were going out of business, and they were very happy to have our business. So their attitude, if it was ever bad, it wasn't very bad for very long. But yeah, I mean, like, a lot of doors open when there's a recession, and when we go to a company in good times and say, hey, we'd like you to, you know, license your product so we can sell it, or, you know, do business with us in some other way. If times are good, they're likely to say, you know, no, we don't need to. But if times are bad, they have no choice, and then they'll take a risk and do various things with us. So we actually kind of almost like Japanese recessions, even though that's a little bit too cruel, maybe. But
so, kind of looking at back at the timeline, you know, at 1998, you said you were kind of making shifts in businesses and making strides, and you mentioned the dot-com bubble collapse, which was not too long after 1998.
Right.
When did you start hiring other people to help you? Because
right from the beginning, we've always had various people here, mostly Japanese, and then I was the only foreigner. And then we've got four foreign staff and six buyers, and then my wife, and then the packing staff. So we're something like 16 or 18 people right now.
Do you have an office location, or is it like everyone at their own place kind of thing? And
oh no, we have a proper company. We built, my wife had some land, and we had to jump through some hoops because it was zoned for agricultural land, which is, Japan is very big on trying to preserve its ability to feed itself, so they don't go through the tribulations that they did when in World War, or at the end of World War II, when they couldn't feed themselves, basically. So they want to preserve the amount of agricultural land, so they presumably they don't allow you to do anything like put a company on this agricultural land, but we got special permission, so we were able to change our land from agricultural use to general use, so we could build our company. So yeah, we have a regular company, and we have a warehouse and a pretty big operation.
Awesome. The reason why I ask is because I recently read an article, a fairly lengthy article written by Danny Chu, and it was talking about him and getting his company off the ground, and he explained the difficulties he had with when it came to finding office space and things like that. So I didn't know if you had experienced any of the same, but it sounds like since the government let you build on that land, it was fairly fortuitous.
Yeah, one thing, like, Danny is in Tokyo, and he's got, you know, it's a very different place in Tokyo, where you've got a lot of, you know, you've got a lot more demand. You've got to actually bid for office space and things like that. We're in Gunma, which is in the exact center of Japan. We're basically 120 kilometers north of Tokyo. And literally, you can throw a rock and it'll land in a rice field. It's a very rural place. And it's really nice. We like this quiet place we're in. Sometimes it's a little bit too quiet, and we think, well, we should live a little bit closer to Tokyo. But yeah, out here, it's actually been part of our stealth approach, because the idea that you'll have a high tech IT business surrounded by rice fields, as we literally are, no one would expect that, and it's sort of part of our ninja technique. So no one can really say anything, and then we had established the company before anyone knew it was happening.
That's kind of nostalgic for us, because we were in Ibaraki.
And okay, yeah, very similar to Gunma.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how many kilometers north of Tokyo we were, but
probably about the same, yeah. But like straight north instead of to the left.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ibaraki is where people talk funny. We don't talk funny hard.
Really? I never knew. I'm sure I talked really funny then, even for Ibaraki.
There was a funeral for one of the members of X Japan who died, Hide, I guess, and he, you know, there were people from Ibaraki being interviewed, and it was so somebody, they were crying, and they were so sad, but they were talking a little bit funny, and it was like, we all want to laugh at their accents, but it was kind of interesting.
I never realized there was like an Ibaraki Ben.
A little bit. My wife could do it. It's like, you know, intoned differently. And of course, Gunma has their own hogan. They have their own dialect, but they don't believe they do. They think they speak Tokyo standard, but they don't.
Well, when you think about it, the States isn't very different. Alabama, oh, yeah, and Georgia and all the South have different shades of Southern. And same with the North. So how do you decide what products that you're going to sell? Because you had mentioned, you know, before you could kind of see what was popular, and then you had that time lag that was slowly becoming shorter and shorter and shorter. So today, how do you figure out what is going to be up on JList.com?
We basically have four Japanese buyers, and each one is responsible for their area, and they're always sort of looking at what's coming down the pipe from distributors and things like that. One guy does toys and snacks. One guy does the adult products and DVDs. One guy does art books and manga. And we have a female buyer who does the bento products and Sailor Moon. And she loved Sailor Moon as a girl. So it's like, she's so happy to be able to like sell Sailor Moon to these happy fans all over the world. She just loves her job. It's so cool. And so they pay attention to what's coming along. And sometimes I make suggestions, and obviously when people ask for stuff and they say, hey, I really want this art book, we definitely listen to that, and we say, okay, well, if this guy wants this art book, maybe 10 people want this art book, so we should carry it. So we do listen to customers a lot, and in many cases that has proved we get, you know, hit products because customers suggested something. We're always looking for like the best thing in the world is something that everyone knows but only comes from Japan, like a Japan only flavor of a food that we like. Kit Kat, Japanese Kit Kat has been a huge, huge thing all over the world. Green tea Kit Kat, we have wasabi Kit Kat. So that kind of thing is what we really like. Something that people know, but then it's sort of available from Japan. It has some unique thing about Japan, like it's wasabi flavored or something like that. So pay attention to those kinds of trends and grab it if we can see for the site.
Speaking of Kit Kats, yeah. One of the things that I know we have enjoyed is the snack subscription. It's awesome. Like the box we got today had the green tea Kit Kats in it.
A massive bag of green tea Kit Kats.
Yeah.
I think the noise that I made was unhuman when I saw it.
We're worried because we knew it could be so popular that we would have trouble to ship the boxes out. And it's been really, really popular. We do like 200 boxes a month, and my poor buyer has to go like to buy 200 of this thing, and if we can't get enough, then we have to choose something else because everyone needs to get the same contents every month. Basically, it's like a, what's that company that sends you a box of stuff every month?
There's a bunch of this popping up. There's one for clothing now.
Yeah, I'm subscribed to one for clothing called Stitch Fix. But there's one for geeky stuff called Loot Crate. And
okay, yeah.
That's what I want next from JList. I want a Loot Crate that'll maybe it'll have snacks, and maybe one time it'll have random gachapon and just all of that fun stuff. So that there's my suggestion.
We do grab bags, and that is super, super popular, and we do, you know, like three or four different grab bags, and then we do some adult grab bags from the end of the year to the beginning of the year, and we have some still on the site, but some have been removed. And that's a little bit difficult because the staff has to, you know, plan for, you know, they're going to sell 500 of these grab bags. They have to plan that much stock. They have to set it aside. They have to count it all, make sure it's stored. So it does, it takes a bit of a toll on the staff. So I tend to, like, we wouldn't want to do grab bags beyond this year end that we do. We do them certain parts of the year, and we do them at conventions when we do conventions. So it's a little bit tricky. We have to think about the wear and tear on the staff.
The gambler's spirit, the grab bag. Gotta love it.
So you've mentioned your staff, and you mentioned the girl who was super happy to sell Sailor Moon stuff to fans around the world, which I could totally imagine myself in that position and would feel the same way.
We have some fans that probably squeal when they hear that. When they hear that.
I can't imagine that job.
The job description?
No, not job description. Job satisfaction. I can't imagine that job satisfaction is something that you struggle with given the industry. And I imagine that a lot of people listening right now are thinking, oh my God, that's the job I've been waiting for my whole life. This is what I'm meant to do. So I can't let you go off an interview without at least spending time to talk about, you know, what would you look for in someone if there's an open job posting at jlist.com?
We actually do have a job posting right now that is still up, but we're probably going to close it soon because we've got a bunch of people in. The job can be seen at, where is it? jlist.com/content/job. And basically, like this particular posting, and then of course, right off the bat, we say we're looking for people in Japan. So if you're not currently in Japan, we're sorry. And then that, you know, 99% of people go, oh God. So we actually don't like to... to tell people about the jobs that are available unless they're already in Japan, if we can do that. But basically, I mean, for ourselves, we're looking for people who have otaku knowledge, they have otaku passion, but then they have to have like level 3 or level 2 of the JLPT Japanese test. And then obviously, like, whatever we're looking for, like if you're a PHP programmer or if you're an e-commerce, you've done e-commerce, that's good. You know, things that are specifically connected to whatever we happen to be have a need for. So it's a, you know, it's a tricky thing. And of course it's, you know, we don't be clear with everybody. It's a tricky thing, but if people have these skills, we can consider them. On the other hand, there's people already in Japan who we generally hire. So it's kind of hard to hire from the US. Yeah. Visas are difficult. You know, to get the visa, it takes a long time.
One of the things that we've told people on our podcast for quite a while is that, you know, it's great to go on the various Japanese job boards and get a job in teaching English in Japan, and you can do that even if you're not currently located in Japan. But the increased ease of getting a different job once you're already in the country is something that's, you know, astronomically different. You know,
To get a job like so. One of the things I like about my role, where I'm telling people about stuff related to Japan, and I'm, you know, like I like language a lot, so I'll write about, you know, here's some of the nuts and bolts of how Japanese language works. Here's how polite Japanese works, just to sort of to give a flavor of that to my readers on the blog. But then I also get a lot of young people, and they say, hey, you know, I love Japan, you know, please give me some advice or whatever. And that's really cool. I get to, like, you know, help these people along. So obviously my advice when I get these kind of requests, first of all, in order to come to Japan, you need to have a 4-year degree. So if you don't have that, you obviously need to think about doing that. And in order to get a visa, you need that as a first, you know, first requirement. So if you don't have that, you know, think along those lines, how you can get that. Don't spend a lot of money, because there's, you know, you can spend way too much money for what you're getting these days with the whole education situation. But yeah, I mean, if you know, there's certainly like lots of jobs available here. There's English teaching, there's editing of stuff that's been translated, and of course translation, things like that. But I always caution people, like, don't ever think that teaching English is something to do as a career. It's something you can do to get over here, and of course that goes for Japan, goes for Korea, goes for China, things like that. It's certainly fun and interesting to do for a couple of years or whatever, but if some people plan to be an English conversation teacher for their whole lives. And I go, ooh, you're probably going to, you know, have some problem along the way. And I always caution people, don't over qualify, like don't get a master's degree or a PhD in teaching of English as a second language or something like that, because the job situation won't be supportive of you. You'll have trouble getting a job in at all in the first place, but even a job that is, you know, worth the trouble of getting those extra credentials.
Yeah, I think we couldn't agree more on that. That's something that we've definitely told everyone who we have made recommendations to and has asked us about going to Japan. We just end up saying, like, go have a great time, do it for a couple years. If you have the Japanese, look at another job that you could move into that's more of a career. But in our experience as well, it's not a the Aikawa field, at least, is not a long-term career field.
Well, the whole thing, like the job, the salaries in the English conversation area have probably fallen slightly since I quit 15 years ago. So I mean, that's not a healthy thing for an industry. Salaries need to go up, at least to match costs. So certainly that's nothing people should be doing. One thing I did, if anyone listening has web technical skills, this is a post that I have on the site right now. I don't know if it'll still be on the site when you guys play this. But I did a post. If you go to my blog and search for blog, go to blog.jls.com and search for a way to work in Japan, and it should pop up. Basically, my advice to people who want to come to Japan and be in a field where you will have a lot of demand is become trained on web programming. Web design is something where Japan is very behind the curve on. And sometimes if you go to websites, Japanese company websites, and they sort of feel like they were made in 2006 and they still use Flash and they're not really very, you know, up with the current standard of what the web is. So if you can get trained on HTML5, CSS3, jQuery, Ajax, and then suddenly you've got these skills that will certainly allow you to be in demand here in Japan. So that's a better way of coming to Japan rather than trying to do English conversation. You know, take a couple of years, get trained in these technologies, or if you already have this kind of background, that's a better approach to coming to Japan. And then if it doesn't work out for some reason, then you've also got skills that will get you hired in some other places in around the world. Or in, you know, Japan is just a great country, but it's way behind the curve. It's you know, they still use fax machines all the time. We get faxes from companies promoting the products they want us to sell, and I'm like, well, dude, you know, internet, all that stuff, all I want is for Japanese companies to set up RSS feeds so we can just check all their products in one time. And of course they just don't know what that is. Like if you're in San Francisco and you have these skills, certainly that's good and you can do various things, but then you're one guy in a pool, or a guy or girl in a pool of a million who has these skills. And then if you go out of your, you know, go to some other place where the skills are more rare, that instantly changes the whole game. And that's actually not a bad, like, you know, I came to Japan, I had this sort of spirit, I liked the idea of, you know, maybe I have the right personality for it or something like that, but I had this sort of idea that, you know, if I can talk to a lot of people, that's cool. And if I can sell something, that's cool. And if I can, you know, teach someone about Japan and they'll say, wow, thanks. And that's like, hey, that's neat, I taught something about Japan. So I really like that. And if you go to a place where you're a rarity among others, if you go to, you know, some other country where you have something special to provide, that immediately changes the whole value equation. And then you can do really interesting stuff in that country. So, and whether it's Japan or, and like when people ask me about, hey, I want to go to Japan because I love Japan. And another thing I very honestly tell them is, Japan is cool. I love Japan. It's great. We're not sure how the whole rest of the century is going to unfold with Japan because they've got all these issues like, obviously there's not enough children being born and they're closing schools or they're converting schools into like facilities to take care of old people. So this is kind of depressing.
It's kind of ironic.
One of my favorite films is Children of Men. Have you seen it?
Oh, I haven't seen it, but I remember the trailers. That was the one where people stopped having babies, right? And
right. It's a very dark film. And it's very realistic. And they do these like 15-minute scenes that are all, they just film a whole scene. And you realize, well, they haven't stopped the camera in 15 minutes and they're just doing this whole scene. So it's really cool, but it's a very dark and depressing film because basically no more babies are being born. And how would the world tackle that if that happened starting tomorrow? What kind of world would we then live in 20 years from now? And I always think about Japan and children of men. I'm like, this is kind of happening because you see, you know, literally like in my wife, you know, she's in her 40s. And then when she was in high school, you had 7 or 8 classes in a school. And then now you've got 3 classes, like in each grade, you've got 40 students times 3. And then that just shrinks every year for every school. And then they close a lot of schools. It's a topic that comes up in anime quite a lot where the school is closed and then the characters have to do something. So that's something that you can sort of see the reality of Japan showing up in anime a lot. My point is that coming to Japan is good. Before you decide for sure, maybe you should do some research on other countries like China. If you go to China and you have an interesting approach and you have, you know, a desire to do something interesting in China, that might be better than Japan, which is, you know, not on its way out, but Japan is in a place where it will probably start to be less prosperous. Taxes will probably go up and it'll be kind of a drag if you're paying taxes because the old people, that's, it's not really our, like if you're young, it's like, well, it's not really our responsibility to, you know, cover taxes for these people just because you guys aren't having enough babies. You know, all these different issues that Japan is going to face. Meanwhile, Japan is a wonderful place and it's, I, you know, it's great for anyone to consider living. I just think that people should do due diligence before they say, okay, I want to go to Japan, maybe consider other options just in case.
As much as I want to ask you about your feelings on Abenomics and the militarization of Japan and the current crisis with ISIS, I'm going to take it to a lighter note.
Okay.
And ask you maybe a little bit more of a fun question of, what are you most excited for in the next, let's say, year to 5 years with regards to anime, anime merchandise, anime series, any of the above?
It's just interesting to watch it all. I was checking the series that are coming in the spring season, and like I get used to there being seasons where there's, you know, 2 or 3 shows I really care about, and then sometimes there'll be like 8 shows that I care about. So you never know what each anime season will actually unfold as. And now there were, you know, 10 shows that I think I'll be watching in the next season, and I'm watching like 6 shows in the current season. So, which is quite it's fun to say my job is to watch anime, but it's actually a lot of work. I have to, you know, do my stuff, and I do my night shift, and I do my Twitter and my Facebook and everything. And then I have to say, well, I have to watch 2 hours of anime or I can't do my post tomorrow.
we can really kind of sympathize with that.
It gets to be a lot of work.
You said that you were watching 6 anime this season. What 6 are you watching?
The Sainai Kanojo no Sudate Kata is quite good. I just started Kofuku Graffiti. What else am I watching? Sometimes I'm watching stuff in the previous season without realizing it's no longer in the current season. Basically, what I will do is start a series, and I'm looking for something to write about that's interesting. Like, is there some point I can make, like an interesting observation on the way they set this anime up, or the language that's used in this position in this particular case, and I can sort of make a little JS update about that, and then there's always something, and sometimes I'll watch a few episodes, and I'll say, okay, I've got my post, and I've told JS, or I told the readers about this show, and then I get too busy and I don't finish the show, but I try to finish it as much as I can.
Are you watching? Let's see, are you watching Parasite? I know that's one that we're enjoying.
Parasite, I didn't get into.
Okay,
I should have, because it, like, if it's like, I look at things like, if you look at my Facebook and my Twitter, what I'm doing is posting a lot of fan art that I see on Pixiv, and I always have this sort of calculation of shows that have a lot of fan art are clearly popular, they're clearly loved by a lot of fans, and we should, you know, pay attention to those shows, and almost always if there's a show that has zero fan art or almost no fan art, you can tell it's because people didn't even give it the time of day. What was that show? Maria of the Scarlet Bullet or whatever. They tried to recreate the magic of Toradora with a kind of silly show about a tsundere girl and guns everywhere. And it wasn't a very popular show, and you could really see that because there was no fan art about it. So yeah, I just try to look at the fan art amount and the quality, and then I sort of reflect that as a mirror and pass that along to people on Facebook who don't necessarily know how to browse Pixiv.
So the key to knowing an anime's success is fan art.
And then there's those that you think that, and then there's shows that break that rule, like the Kill Me Baby was a real idiosyncratic show, and it really wasn't that popular. We didn't get any products at all about it, and it, I don't think it, like, looking at the English blogs, it didn't make much of a splash, and yet there's a ton of really good fan art of it. So sometimes you just never know.
All right, well, I think we are at the point where we could probably start a whole new topic and take another hour of your time, but we'll be respectful of the fact that it is morning where you are as we're recording right now, and you probably have a full work day ahead of you.
I just want to wrap up the interview tying the conversation back to where it started with one final question, and if you could, is there anything regarding J-List that you see coming up in the future? Like, do you have any upcoming developments or things you want to announce or things that you're particularly excited about in regards to the company?
Well, basically, J-List is sort of two halves. We are J-List, the company that is a shop. We sell things from Japan. We try to be a mirror of everything that's cool about Japan. So if it's something that you love about Japan, we probably have it somewhere on our site. Then the other half of our company is Jast USA, which is visual novels. We're a licensor of visual novels. We translate them, sell them. And so both of those areas, we're doing a lot of interesting things. We have a new website coming for the J-List side, very mobile-friendly website, of course, because people use their cell phones a lot more, like more than they do on PCs actually by now. So I have a lot of good things coming there. We have a lot of games that we're going to be releasing this year. We have a big backlog, and we're really attacking the backlog to get the backlog cleared out. There's a remake of Kana, Little Sister, which is a really classic visual novel about a guy whose sister is dying. And it's a great, great story. And we have Raid 3 coming, and we have Shiny Days coming. So we have a lot of game-related stuff that will be posted, and hopefully fans will be supportive of us. And then J-List, of course, we just continue to do this fun job of three times a week. Here's these new products, here's these anime magazines that have posters of them, isn't that nice, and all these cool things. So we basically just continue doing that and try to be better at it than we were last year and the previous year and all that stuff.
Well, I have hundreds of other questions, but I think it's probably better to group them and save them for future occasions where we can meet and talk.
So one more time for everybody who, you know, maybe didn't have a pen and paper or wasn't in front of their computer when you said it first time.
Or wasn't listening at all for some reason.
Yeah, I know. Crazy people. Give us the rundown one more time on where people can find you and what they can find there.
Okay, so our website is jlist.com, which is the everything website, including adult products. So if you don't want to see adult products or if you're at work or whatever, our all ages site is jbox.com, jbox.com. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/JListCom, one word. I'm on Twitter as @MarkJList, and peterpayne.com is our Tumblr, if you want to look at that. And then our blog is blog.JList.com. So we hope you guys will follow us and engage in conversations with us.
And they are all awesome to follow. I didn't realize you had a Tumblr, but now I'm going to have to go and stalk you on Tumblr.
basically an archive. Like when I run a remember something I know I posted before, I go to the Tumblr and I can search it more easily. So it's sort of a place where everything just piles up and I can go back and find it later, which is very useful to have.
Tumblr is a strange place of the internet, but I too find it useful.
Peter.
Sometimes it's as black as 4chan, but yeah.
Peter, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. I find you to be an incredibly insightful person, and I've really enjoyed the conversation.
Love talking with you guys.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, take care.